Grift album. It was Noah Lennox's, a.k.a. Panda Bear's, seventh album. And then, where did we go? I think, who did we have next? It was Jeff Tweedy with Too Real, and that was from his album, Twilight Override, and that was his fifth solo album that was released last year in 2025. And after Jeff Tweedy, it was the Rolling Stones with Waiting on a Friend, and that was from their Tattoo You album. Song was started in the early 70s, but didn't make it until vinyl, until the release of this album in 1981, and that's pretty much the whole story of that album. It was a bunch of outtakes that they did. But you know what? It was a fantastic album. Oh, and I had a skip in it. You felt my, I had to put my finger beside the stylus there and give it a little nudge. Yeah, that was, I bought that album in Fort McMurray, so in 1981, that's a long time ago. And then finishing the set was Fleetwood Mac with Gold Dust Woman, and that was from the Rumours album released in 1977. Stevie Nicks wrote and sang the song. I'm almost done. I got one more song to play, and I hope it's kind of appropriate for the weather that we've had today. But anyways, thank you so much for listening. I certainly appreciate it. And I got to get out of here. The show's called At Large. It's 101.5 UMFM.
Myself, or should I work so hard? Sit and dream about the days to come. Half undressed, just soaking up the sun. Sitting here, I hope I don't get fried. 2 years ago, you know, I almost died. And yet, there's nothing better for your soul than lying in the sun and listen to rock and roll. Sunny day.
Good evening and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba.
Our guest this evening is Jordan Miller, artist, consultant, and gallery owner of Creatory Incorporated here in Winnipeg. Jordan graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts from the University of Manitoba, majoring in drawing, painting, and mixed media. She also holds a diploma in arts and cultural management from the University of Winnipeg. Jordan paints in an abstract style with acrylics and ink. She has mentored many artists in both the creation and the marketing of art as a private mentor and through Mala's mentor on the Fly program. She has exhibited her work in many solo and group shows in Winnipeg, such as her Creatory, Pulse Gallery, Fleet Gallery, Urban Shaman, Gallery 111 at the University of Winnipeg, and in rural Manitoba venues such as the Gallery in the Park in Altona, Fusion Arts Center in Portage, and Golden Prairie Arts in Carmen. Jordan was the recipient of the 35th Annual Women of Distinction Award in the Arts in 2011 and one of the three finalists for the Future Leaders of Manitoba Awards in 2015. She has her intuitive artworks in a group show with Sari Havala at Creatory running from September 22nd to October 4th, 2022, entitled Current Connections. Good evening and welcome to Art World Innovators. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
After graduating from your fine arts degree, you bravely decided to open your own gallery. Can you tell us about this experience and how you have so successfully run one of our city's best galleries for so many years?
Thank you. It's a little bit complicated how it started. And I graduated from fine arts in 2002, and I was looking for a gallery to show my work. And what I was hearing, the rumor on the street was there were no places for new grads to go. And I thought, well, what do we do now, right? So I got together with five of my friends and we started a gallery called Five on Third Gallery. And that was around for 2 years. And then they went off to do their own thing, whether it was to have a family, to buy a new house, to retire. Some of the artists were older. One of them wanted to move to BC. All these different things happened. Your life starts a little bit. And then after you get going, you really decide on what your direction is. So I didn't blame them at all for that. So I found 13 people to start another space with me, which was called Outworks Gallery. So I did that for 4.5 years in total. And then I started looking for a new venue with my partner at the time, and we started Creatory Gallery and Studio. So that was to become my full-time job. Prior to that, it was sort of like volunteer collective collaborative experience. So I already knew what it felt like to do what I was doing, but not on a full-time basis. So that was really the beginning of what do I do next and how do I navigate this world as an artist.
When did you discover your interest in art and how has your work developed over the years?
In 1991, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And at that time, I was playing sports and I was really athletic. And my doctor told me that I should find a quiet activity to do. And I was like, what's that? I don't do quiet activities. So my mom got me some acrylic paints and I started painting. And I was doing a lot of landscape work and really I'm not great at drawing. And so I dabbled in art all the way through elementary school, but I didn't really take it seriously. But I guess my mom, because she was a teacher, she saw something in me that I didn't really see. And even when I was in grade 12, I still didn't believe that I could get into fine arts. So she encouraged me to become an artist. And then I talked about becoming a teacher like my mom was. And she said, absolutely not. You're going into fine arts. I was like, whose parents actually say that? I applied and I was accepted. It was really scary because I grew up in a small town in rural Manitoba. And when I moved into Winnipeg, I didn't know anyone. I didn't know how to take a bus. So I lived on the university campus and I met so many great people through St. John's College and the University of Manitoba that I continued on with fine arts. I thought that maybe I would go into theater because I saw more of a future in set design and production. And I fell in love with art school and I just kept going with it. And then my entire everything just flipped. So that's sort of how I got the start in art. But I don't create art now like I did back then at all. It's very different. I used to work with diseased body ideas and things like that, all the gruesome art school things that you kind of go through when you're building yourself up as an artist.
So what materials do you work with now? And can you describe a little bit about your process and style?
So right now, my biggest thing is to work with alcohol inks. They are sort of toxic materials. And so I only can do them in my studio once in a while. So what I do is I do a lot of the base coat of alcohol, and then I take them into my studio at home and I do all the details on top. So they're pretty intense for this show that I'm working on right now. And then when I'm not doing alcohol inks, I'm just painting. And my paintings are very much about the flow of the paint and they're very intuitive. So nothing is pre-planned because what I've found throughout my 20 years of over 20 years of being an artist is that if I'm planning, they look planned. And I don't like that feeling. I like that organic, flowy, whatever happens, happens feeling, because everything in my job is about planning, planning exhibitions, planning with artists, planning drop-off, labels, price lists, blah, 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 paying bills. It's all planned. Like it's part of a structure. And when I started working this way, it was the only way that I could really relax and focus on something else other than the structure that a business very much has to be, because you have to make money and you have to do all these things. So everything is very much run like a machine and it has to be one thing after the next all the time. You're writing a press release, you're doing this, you're doing that, your website. So much stuff to do for an art gallery. And a lot of people don't realize that. They actually think that I paint at Creatory all day long. And I'm like, yeah, the artwork just appears here. It's nothing like that. There's a lot of hard work and it goes home with me every night. And I need something that's different than working on a business.
Can you tell us a little about the artists who have studios at your gallery?
So my entire gallery space is called Creatory Gallery and Studios. So there are about 10 studios within Creatory, and Creatory is 8,800 square feet. Each room within Creatory has a purpose related to art. We have our main gallery, our auxiliary gallery, which is our hallway, and that's for members. And then we have all of the studio spaces. So we have artists that do wood carving, paintings, drawings, illustration, craft, plaster, leather, a lot of illustrations. Some of it is the darker art. Some of it is not. We have, I think it's 17 artists right now, but that number frequently changes.
You've had many exhibitions over the years. Can you tell us about a few?
Anya Studer had a show during the pandemic and she sold almost all of them off the wall. And then I think she had two illustrations at the end. And that was when we were only allowed to be open 25%. And that was pretty amazing. And then she also had flowers embroidered on masks. And those weren't as popular, but she still sold some of them. So I'm really proud of her. She was also, I think that was her fourth exhibition with me, which was really great as well. And we've had an exhibition by Michael Joyal. It was 365 Days Before I Sleep. I always remember the title because every day he did one small painting that made up the whole thing. I did a 364 piece show before him, which was completely different. I didn't do a piece a day. It was a piece to represent each day in a year. There was no way working full time I would ever be able to do a piece because my hours are sometimes 12-hour days. So there's no time for art. It's just sleep and eat and go to bed. But I remember that one being quite amazing. I would never be able to do that many pieces, even one a day, but they were small 4x6. And I actually have two of them in my collection. I do support my artists in more ways than just hanging their art. I also try to support them every once in a while. So if I need a gift, I'll buy a mug or a card that somebody has made, something like that, because I think our world needs to work together to support artists and also patrons of the arts.
Can you give us a little bit more detail about what's involved in preparing for an exhibition?
Sure. In my gallery in particular, I'll just talk about it because it's easiest. I am booking shows 2 years in advance all the time because most of my artists cannot produce 30 pieces within a year. Some artists and art centers, they book as well. The funded galleries, usually they do a call for submissions. In my particular gallery, it's a rental gallery, so it works a little bit different. I let the artists do whatever they would like in the space. It's not curated. It's not juried unless it's a show where it's been juried. It's a different thing. I do call for submissions every once in a while. But in this particular situation, the artist puts together everything. And that includes their labels, their price list, their art documentation, their exhibition statement, their bio, their CV, if they want to have one. Most artists already have it in the works, but they have to add to it, right? And then they have to provide professional images for the press release and things like that. It's a lot of extra work. And then you have to have a guest book and you have to invite people and you got to send out invitations. So for this show that I'm having coming up, depending on when this is aired, my mailing list is 330 people. So I started writing out my invitations in May and I finished the last ones in September and they went out September 6th. And so I'm always working at that and like handing them out to people who might want to come and see the show, but not overpowering the other exhibitions that I have. Just if I'm talking to someone I know, I hand them an invitation because not everyone I know and have met is actually on my mailing list. So you got to get the word out. And I'd say you can't have a show without the people. So that's probably the most important part. But then you also have your social media, your website, your blog. And I write a blog and I haven't written my blog for almost 2 years. But I did for this show. But time, there's so many things that you have to do and consider and how do you price your art? And maybe a show took less time for some pieces and more for others, but the public doesn't necessarily understand the price difference. So I do a lot of consulting with artists beforehand. I actually do it as a side job. It's under Miller Art Consulting. And I'm just always trying to help other artists realize what has to be done. This exhibition that I'm having now this year, it's the most relaxed I've ever been. I think it's because I don't have a reception. I think the reception was always sort of a little bit more stressful for me, but I've been done my pieces for the last few weeks for the most part, except for one. And I've actually created more pieces than what I need for the exhibition, which is also super rare. Usually I'm scrambling to try to get it all done. And I also am showing with a friend of mine and she has a few pieces in the show and we've collaborated on some pieces. So I most likely will be taking out a lot of my pieces, but I'll have more pieces for the future as well.
So what was the experience like in collaborating with another artist?
So in my situation right now, Sari and I, we both create fairly similar colors, the flow, the intuitive part. But in my work, I have more of an image base and she has more of a linear flow. So we have found after doing quite a few collaborations that it is easier if I begin and I do my design, figurative, flowy pattern. Sometimes it's object. Sometimes it just looks more like a shape, right? And then she takes it home and she details it. And that gives a little bit more context to the work and sort of makes it feel like it's mine. But when she starts it, I don't know how to develop it into something else. So I find it a little bit more difficult because I want it to be something. So I think in the future, we're going to do it that way. We decided we did two prior to this exhibition. And then we started working on this exhibition in 2019. And then we were rescheduled because of the pandemic. There were 30 weeks that I had to reschedule. So I didn't feel right about doing a show before all these other artists that had to be canceled. And I canceled mine. It was one of the very first shows that I canceled and moved forward. And I moved mine to September and early October because I thought, oh, the pandemic in 22 is going to be over and everything will be all good. And all these shows will happen. It ended up being two whole years it took basically to move everything over and still recovering from a lot of that. So we had a whole plan of doing more collaborations and it was going to be my piece, her piece, collaboration on each wall so you could see how they fit together. And it just completely changed because everything had to change. So we've really shifted our entire exhibition. Things happened with her, things happened with me, and our lives are completely different now than they were pre-pandemic. So I think a lot of that actually has shown up in our work. There's one that's like an angel's wings. She had started it and unfortunately her mother had passed away. She's quite a bit younger than me. So it was really sad. It looked like a woman before when I had it. And all of a sudden I saw these wings that just started to appear. And I was thinking about Sari and I was thinking about her mom. And so the context of the time actually came into the piece. And I took that concept and I gave it to her. I wrote her a little note and I said, I don't know what happened here, but I can see your mom in this piece. I think this piece was always meant to help you in your healing. And so I gave her the piece and the wings she has. I don't have a picture of it yet, but the wings are so beautiful. It's not on our website or anything, but it will be once the show is started.
First Fridays in the Exchange are a great opportunity to highlight your shows and gallery. Can you tell us a bit more about this monthly event and how it's benefited your gallery and artists in general over the years?
So First Fridays, I find, is a great evening for exposure. Definitely people will come around and walk that wouldn't normally come into the gallery. The one issue that I find with it is that a lot of people think that when they buy something, they have to carry it with them as they go around to the next venue, which isn't really a problem because I can always hold it till the next day or whatever. So a lot of times people don't buy during First Friday, but a good thing is that they will come back and maybe their next visits, they'll make a purchase if it's on a Saturday or another weekday. It is one thing that I wish would happen a little bit more. Right now, I'm not doing receptions in my gallery because I am high risk. I wear an insulin pump. I have a CGM. Like, it's a little bit riskier for me as a person, but maybe eventually we'll go back to receptions. But, you know, usually it's the energy that's in the room that helps generate sales. And then the artist, it benefits, right? Like, I want to see pieces be sold in my gallery because that means that that artist is being a success. I hate to say money is the answer here, but in order for us to keep going as artists, we always have to be making sales because some of us are not applying for grants or not eligible for grants. So the idea is to keep going with what you love and to be able to support yourself.
Do any of your artists have the opportunity to do residencies?
So there are residencies all over Canada, as we're all really well aware. A lot of my artists in particular are not at the level where they're applying for residencies. I would like to myself at some point, I would be ready to do that. But I feel like a lot of them are doing this more as a hobby where they're hoping that it will be a side gig for them. So they work full-time jobs, so it doesn't really give the flexibility. But sometimes people do when they're on their summer break because they'll go and do a residency somewhere. Like, I would love to go to Banff and do a residency. I don't know if that's the right fit, but that's one thing that I dream about in my future. And I'm sure other artists would really love that too. There are some weekend ones that artists go to as well that are in Creatory. It was like more like a class structure than a residency, because residencies, like most of the time you go off and you do it on your own and you're like a hermit in a room, right? In a cottage somewhere, and you're exploring your themes, and it gives you really good time to focus in on what you're doing as a craft. And then there's the other kinds of residencies where you're doing one-on-one lessons with someone who's a mentor.
And do you do a lot of mentorships?
I have done a few mentorships, one with MAWA this past year, and a couple of ones where they've contacted me because of MAWA, because my name is on their website, and they've paid me personally. But I've done one where MAWA hired me. It was 6 hours, and I got paid for those times a little bit better than what I get paid as an independent. But I do mentorships and consulting with artists usually every week, but I've been taking a break during the summer months, and I'm going back to consulting in October.
Do you have any upcoming shows that you can share with our audience?
So after mine is a group called TFAM, and it's a textile show. They've come up to their 5 years of working with textiles, and it's a group exhibition of all of their members, or I think there's 36 people that have submitted for the show. Normally don't do group shows in my gallery anymore because it usually means less people come, but something happened with the artist that was going to have the exhibition, and so she decided to ask her group if they could do an exhibition together. So I allowed it for this because we are still in a pandemic and it's kind of hard to do last minute things and changes. So she actually moved her show to another day in the future and also does fiber work. And then we have an artist. It's going to be her first show. Her name's Brandy Shibaga, I think is how you say it. And she has animals in her show, very similar to the one that I have on right now, which will be over by the time this is aired, unfortunately. And then we have a new show every 2 weeks. It's very different from one after the other after the other. There are exhibitions with every medium, every style of art. Every show is very different from one another. And our auxiliary gallery that is adjacent to the gallery, it changes every 5 weeks. So every single week I'm changing something new. So every second or third Saturday or second Wednesday, there's a new exhibition coming in. So keeping track of all these things is really difficult.
What's next for you?
I have so many things in my brain that I want to do. So right now my focus is 100% on Creatory after the show to get caught up, get things going again. I'm taking a 2 week break while my show is on from some of the administrative tasks just to focus on my own customer base. And then I will be starting to work on my next exhibition, which right now is scheduled for March 24. And it will be a solo show, and it will be at Creatory. I also wait 2 years to do shows. I went on the waiting list before because my show was actually booked for 2019, for 2021. So now I'm waiting again, but I had booked myself already into the time slot for 2024 before I knew all these reschedules were going to happen. So it's kind of complicated, but I show at Pulse Gallery as one of the resident artists. I've been there since 2015, so all of my pieces that I create in between shows, they actually go there, and then I hold on to 30 pieces while I work on the next exhibition. So everything gets scattered throughout the city. I have pieces at Birchwood Art Gallery on Pembina, and then I've been in other shows. So I actually did 3 shows during the pandemic so far. One was at Fleet Gallery, one was at Gas Station Art Center. I did a pop-up at Pulse Gallery, and I'm doing possibly a solo show with Pulse Gallery. It's in discussion. I'm really, really hoping that in 2025, I can do Art Expo. There's some change probably happening in my life because, as I mentioned before, I have type 1 diabetes and I feel like I'm slowing down. My health is deteriorating a little bit, which is kind of sad, I guess. But it's also telling, my body's sort of telling me that one day I won't be able to do what I'm doing to the level that I am. So I am thinking about making a lot of changes in my future.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with us and your insight with our audience. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and we wish you continued success.
Thank you so much for having me on your show today, and I hope everything goes well with you too.
Thank you so much.
For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5.
I thought I would close tonight's episode with music by French classical pianist Alain Lefebvre from his album Rive Gauche.
host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.
Standing up against racism is an ongoing battle. How will you help?
I will listen to and learn from people who don't look like me.
I commit to find the strength to work on my own implicit biases, to better educate myself, and to encourage those around me to do the same.
I will listen actively and respectfully.
This message is brought to you by the Canadian Anti-Racism Youth Coalition. Visit caryc.ca for more information about how you can stand up and speak out.
Since introducing the world to the sound of Cuba's golden era, Buena Vista Social Club has become one of the most celebrated musical legacies in history, a living tradition still filling stages from Havana to around the world. Now carried forward by Buena Vista Orchestra, the music returns with the powerhouse lineup led by violinist Rolando Morejon Reyes and world-class players connected to the Buena Vista Social Club, Celia Cruz, the Afro-Cuban All-Stars, and more. Don't miss Buena Vista Orchestra at the Burton Cummings Theater Sunday, October 25th. Tickets on sale now, $39.50 plus fees via Ticketmaster. Don't miss Buena Vista Orchestra Live, October 25th, proudly supported by UMFM 101.5.
I love the radio. Yes, I love the radio. I love the radio. Yes, I love the radio. I love you, the radio. I love you too, the radio.
You're listening to CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg, Manitoba, your hit-free radio station, in case you didn't notice.
The radio, the radio, the radio.